The Apple event finished with something not quite like a one more thing, but you have to believe that whatever Apple gives that end spot to is the thing that's the future of Apple. And it was shared this time between two very developer-centric things, which makes sense for WWDC. The one that I am most interested in is their pitch for augmented reality. And the second one was Swift. I wanted to talk to you and spend some time, more time than the 5 minutes we had left, or like the negative 5 minutes we had left.
The 5 minutes we didn't have left.
The 5 minutes we didn't have left from the last episode that we just did about these things, because even though they didn't get too much time, that last spot was very intriguing to me. So augmented reality, this is a thing that Apple has been trying to get developers interested in and excited in for a good while now, but there is a definite lack of options for how accessible, how immersive augmented reality can be when you're holding a screen in front of you and trying to look at the world through your iPhone's camera, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, that's the way that it's been pitched. And I can't even remember how many years. I mean, I guess it must be 3 years because they're on ARKit 3 now. So
right.
For 3 years, they've been trying to sell developers at the end of the conference on building AR stuff.
Well, they haven't been trying to sell developers at the end of the conference. They've been making it something in the middle of their keynotes, right? Like, here's all these new features we have for developers. Oh, one of the things is AR. Look how easy it is to model a 3D object, and people can, IKEA can have furniture that pops up in your house now. How cool is that? And that was how it was 2 years ago. That's how it was last year. But this year, it was the final thing that they wanted to show developers and get them excited about. And they spent a decent chunk of time demoing it with a few different people coming out and showing how cool it could be.
Right. I guess that's true. In the past couple of years, it's been pitched as a feature of iOS devices that can be added to software for iOS devices. And now it's starting to shift into the sort of future of the platform, of all of the platforms, part of the conversation.
I think I can remember a couple of big manufacturers of goods like coming out and showing how cool it is to like see their products in their home. I think it might have been like Wayfair or West Elm or something like that. Or if they weren't on stage, they were one of the people that were featured as like things to do with AR in the App Store right when it started coming out. And then I felt like there was a few little games that they showed where there was like AR components of it, but now they're talking about full-fledged AR experiences, which is a very different thing. But the problem is that we're still confined to these screens. So, you know, it's hard for me to believe that that is the end result that Apple is anticipating.
Yeah. They announced three different things this time in AR. ARKit has been sort of the name for what they've been releasing over the past couple of years, which is the software development kit for adding AR elements into your apps. And this time they added new features to ARKit, but they also released something called RealityKit and an app for composing AR scenes called AR Composer. Which is a lot more tooling than they've been providing in the past. They've sort of been relying on developers to figure out how to do this stuff themselves using, you know, the basic frameworks that they're providing. But now they're really starting to roll out like tools to build AR stuff with. And we can get into what each of those things are. But overall, I think the message that they're trying to send by doing this sort of by promoting it in importance to something that applies across all platforms, I think they're trying to get the message to developers that you should get started building this stuff. Like, we've been providing you tools for 3 years.
Exactly.
And something I said to you on Monday was, you know, it doesn't look like, like this looks like next year's news.
Right.
But the reason they have been announcing it for years prior to the release of any eventual like heads up AR hardware is that it's going to take that long to get this stuff ready because of how big of a paradigm shift it is. And they want there to be software available on day one of the augmented reality future, which they're just testing with this idea of holding, you know, fairly heavy glass, steel, and aluminum devices up to your eyes to look through.
Which you can tell by the way that people are demoing it on stage, which is you sort of do this weird hunch thing when you do it. I don't know what that's about exactly. I guess it's because you have to point the camera kind of towards the ground. But I feel like every single person that demos an AR product kind of like hunches down a little bit, bends their knees, points their head down towards the ground. It does not look like something that you would want to do for an entire day or have like an entire experience through.
Yeah, it's awful.
And I think that Apple is smart enough to know that that is not the thing that people will be doing. You can look at all of the people who are rapidly iterating VR experiences to be as seamless as possible and centered around a pair of glasses to tell that that's like the way of the future, right?
Right. The thing that Apple can't do is they can't say this is for future hardware that we haven't announced yet because they're Apple.
Right.
So they have to pretend like this is for the hardware that exists right now.
Exactly. And it's getting pretty good for the hardware right now. There's some pretty cool stuff that's coming out of it. And have you used any of these AR experiences for the iPhone?
I've used the Measure app that Apple released, and it worked okay. I used it to measure the size of a crib for the baby to see if it would fit in a car that we were packing really tight. It worked. It seemed to be pretty accurate even.
Mm-hmm.
I did it 3 times to make sure, and I got the same readings every time. But that's kind of it. I haven't. Oh, and I guess I tried the AR mode of Pokemon Go when that was happening, but that was like years ago. And
right. That felt removed.
Yeah. And it was obviously, like a sideshow. Like it was not as fun to play that way as it was to play the full video game way. And that's going to be different now with the quality of tools that Apple released on Monday. But it's still going to feel dumb holding your phone up. And like the crouching over and the super careful posture, I feel like that comes from the control input too. Like you can look around all you want by swinging your arms around and looking at your phone, but like to do anything on its interface, you still have to use your thumb on this tiny little screen.
Yeah, you have to block your own view.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You can't see when you're controlling things. So, you know, it's very weird and obviously very in between.
I think that one of the only examples of AR stuff that I've used beyond the Measure app, which is really good, by the way,
yeah,
is like when developers use those little things where like you can put a 3D model inside of a Safari window that you can like pop out into the real world. Panic just did that with their Playdate. So you could like see how big the Playdate was. Which is pretty cool that you can just open a Safari window, open this 3D object, open your camera, and then it's like there on the floor next to you or whatever. But again, this is all super rudimentary stuff. This isn't anything that you would want to spend any longer than 1 minute messing with. And Apple was making cases for spending a lot of time in augmented reality today.
And they even announced some features on other platforms. Like the one that occurs to me is the new look around feature in Maps, like that.
Yes,
that is their answer to Street View, and it involves like actual smooth 3D motion through the environment. But of course, it's on the railroad tracks of the roads that are in Maps, just like Street View is. But the use case they showed was looking around, it like in 360 degrees on a street of a place and seeing the points of interest and saving them to your collections and Maps. And that looks like a great use case for on a flat glass screen, frankly. Like I would do that on my iPad, but how much cooler would it be to do walking in the actual place?
The big demo that they did was with Mojang and Minecraft Earth, which is a new version of Minecraft that's centered around an AR experience, which they have showed a few times before. Have you seen this before on any other like keynote, a non-Apple keynote?
Oh, Minecraft itself?
This AR Minecraft type thing.
No, I haven't. There was another game demo in a previous WWDC keynote of an AR game that was sort of like an action game where you were like bombing a fortress or something.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Mm-hmm.
So this didn't seem so different to me, except that it had the life-size zoom in version where, and then the person could walk into the environment.
Right. So that's the new thing. So I want to say it was 2 years ago, but it might've been just one. Microsoft demoed a new version of their HoloLens glasses, which is their version of AR, which I've tried, by the way. and it rules. Like, it's so cool. AR glasses are awesome. They're just huge and bulky, and the screens are bad, and all the problems that Apple needs to fix before they'll ever release their version, right?
Yeah.
And Minecraft got demoed for it, and what they demoed was exactly that tabletop version of a Minecraft castle or house or whatever it was. That you could like interact with and have a little character run around in. What they did not do was the big kind of grand reveal that Apple did this time, which was, okay, let's take it off the table and just into the world, which was a very cool difference because honestly, playing with a like table-sized Minecraft is not something that I feel like anyone would actually want to do for a long period of time because I gotta imagine that kind of hurts your eyes after a little while. And these games that are developed to have like a first-person view that you control with a controller do not necessarily work very, very well when you, turn it into this third-person bird's-eye view thing that you have to control with a shaky head cam. But the idea of actually being able to like go into a Minecraft world that you have built and be the character in the middle of the thing, that is very different. And that is something, again, that I feel like doesn't really work on the long term with a tablet or a phone in your hands. But that's something that I could see people spending a lot of time in if the interface and the way that you were actually interacting with that world made sense, like a pair of glasses.
It does still have some shortcomings, though. Like, you can't go upstairs in the fortress in any realistic way. This is the problem I've had with all of the VR experiences I've had, too. It's like, yeah, you can look around and move in an environment, but you can't actually walk anywhere. Or in the best case, you can walk across a room and then you hit a wall.
So I noticed that in this demo, and I could be wrong, but I think I'm right. I noticed that in this demo, they actually built the ground up higher than it needed to be. Like, I don't think that the ground was the ground, so to speak. I think the ground was probably like at people's shins. And I don't think that that was an accident. I think that that was their way of making you feel like you were at the correct perspective for the world. So I could totally see them just zipping you up to a second floor. You definitely couldn't walk up the stairs, but you could, you know, point your character there and teleport there or whatever. And then the entire experience for you would just shift the perspective for that second floor to now be at your shins. Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, but I it still breaks the frame, the mental frame of this being a real environment. And I feel like any time that there's a split between, wow, this feels like I'm really there, and wow, I'm playing a video game right now, it becomes disorienting. I still am very resistant to the idea that AR is a gaming interface. Why wouldn't you want to just go full VR and play games in a completely imaginary space? I mean, of course you could design games that were just took place like in outside in the physical world. Like, yeah, Pokemon Go will probably be really awesome in AR because it just involves sort of moving around in your real environment and then like little characters pop out of the the bushes or whatever. But like going into a built environment that isn't really there doesn't make sense to me. I feel like it's still just something that demos really well on stage compared to, you know, Yelp reviews floating over restaurants or something. I mean, it's something they can do in the room at a theater and have something happen that's interesting. But it still feels to me like AR is actually going to be like when they launch hardware, the demos are going to be all of the apps you use on your phone, like transposed onto the world around you. And that is still exciting to me. It's just, you know, it's not, they're not going to do it now. That would be insane to like have like a floating messages window that you can see in three dimensions through your iPhone instead of just having messages on the screen. But I just can't get into the gaming aspect of this as impressive as the tech obviously is. That just doesn't seem like what AR is for to me.
Yeah. And you might very well be right about that. And I think that this is Apple testing the waters a little bit about what's possible to do with these camera setups that they've created on their phone that might translate to a pair of glasses at a later date. But I don't know. This gets me very excited. And I am like the right person to get excited about this kind of stuff. I don't know how much you've paid attention to the updates that VR has been getting, but I've desperately wanted to try virtual reality for a long time now. And I haven't because I like want to have a good first experience, and I'm resistant to the idea of having a bad first experience. So, you know, like they've had demos at the Microsoft store. That's the last thing that I would ever do is go and put this headset on that everyone else has put on before that's sweaty and gross and like have 10 employees standing around me as I try to experience this thing. That sounds awful to me. But this month, Oculus came out with a new version called the Quest that is the first wire-free virtual reality headset. So it has no need to hook up to a PC. It has no need to hook up to anything that's like around the room. You put the headset on, you put the controllers in your hands, and you're good to go. It has a very small PC built into the mount itself. And you can just download games straight to the headset and play them that way. And I will be shocked if one of those doesn't exist in my house at a very soon point. I don't imagine that I'll be able to hold back on keeping that from being a purchase of mine for much longer. So like this kind of stuff does get me excited because I see the power in it. And when I use the HoloLens, I can tell you that I really loved it. And the amount of people that I was able to stick that headset on that were totally non-techie people that were having incredible experiences was pretty high. It was able to get people very, very, very immersed in what was a pretty rudimentary experience. Like I said, the screens were not very high res. The floatiness was pretty high. It didn't necessarily like stick to the places. Excuse me. It didn't necessarily stick to the places that it was supposed to, but it was still so good. And that was using just the crappiest versions of ideas for what AR should be and tech for how to do AR that existed, you know, 5 years ago. So what's possible when you give somebody like Apple control over that, and when you give people years of development time to create real good AR experiences, is really a powerful thing.
Hi, internet friends. It's John here. Internet Friends is brought to you by my work at Ablaze Interactions, where I solve communication problems for clients who work to repair our world. I can help with information architecture to transform your website, content strategy to tell the right story and reach the right audience, and writing and editing to find the authentic voice of your company or organization, your product, or your idea. Ablaze Interactions has consulted for world-renowned events, political candidates, law firms, nonprofits, and great apps on the App Store. Light up your ideas. Go to ablaze.co and let me know if you're interested in working together. So let's talk about what technologies Apple released to bring up the state of the art to 2019 for what you can do in AR.
Yeah.
The version 3 update to AR Kit, I think, is the most impressive. It was the stuff that was being demoed most obviously in that Minecraft demo, which are there were two kind of marquee features. The first is people occlusion, meaning virtual objects can realistically move in front of and behind people, and it will block the people, or the people will block them in realistic ways. So instead of just floating around, kind of not in relation to object. Well, there was different detection for objects, and people were not like that. Now there's a special class of object in the world called a person, and you can tell that it's a person. And like when they wave their hand, the hand will go back and forth in front of the object without messing it up. And then the other is real time motion capture, which is, this is pretty awesome because this is the kind of thing that was sort of the domain of Hollywood level technology for like most of our, you know, like since Toy Story era, which is that, you know, using the movement of real people to animate, you know, people shaped objects in that are virtual. And the iPhone and iPad cameras can now do this in real time. So you can link, you know, like a puppet, like a 3D puppet, to a person in the scene, and when that person waves their arm, the puppet waves their arm.
In the Minecraft demo, they used that by having the person controlling a character do a few different gestures, and then the character seamlessly did them. And I did think back afterwards to when that was happening, that was the thing that I most expected to go wrong from the stage.
Yeah.
Because even though that's pretty simple, it's actually so complex. And I feel like that's the kind of stuff that when you try to demo it, you have to do it three or four times before it actually takes.
Totally.
And it worked really well.
It worked better than the new text selection gestures on iPad that they demoed that's right. on stage. So that's ARKit 3. Then the new one, ReaLiKit, seems like what that's about is just realism. It creates scaling. It handles scaling and lighting and audio moving around and like various forms of rendering that make the objects look more realistic, which is obviously really important. We all know from video games, like just the way that shadows fall from an object can make the difference between it looking obviously fake and looking obviously real. And so Apple's, handling that at the library level now for developers. And then they put these things together into an application called Reality Composer. And this may be one of the most powerful apps Apple has ever made for its users, which is just basically, like a way of drawing 3D objects into the world in a graphical interface. Instead, you don't have to write it line by line. You can just like put the objects there and move them around. And it's all integrated with Xcode. So you can just write it into your app when you've built it. This is what I mean when I say that this year's announcement seemed to be Apple saying, y'all should get started on this.
Exactly. Yes, I totally agree with that. And that makes me really excited because, John, I didn't really think that we were going to be getting anything cool, any new weird AR products from Apple for a long time. I was assuming that this was going to be years down the road, but this makes me feel like it might be much sooner than that.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, there have been sort of analyst rumblings about 2020 as the first time we will see an Apple AR display, glasses or whatever it is. We shouldn't keep saying glasses because we don't actually know what it will be. For all we know, it could be like a ski mask or something, or a helmet. But the year 2020 has floated around. But of course, that could mean they show it to us as the one more thing at the fall 2020 hardware event. And then they say coming in 2021, but then we'll at least know it's coming. That would then, of course, give them a whole nother developer cycle to have new APIs at WWDC 2021 that say, here's how you tie the stuff into the hardware. So it could still be a couple, 3 years away, but it does definitely seem like we're going to know about it sooner than we dreamed.
Tell me, I'm curious to know your perspective on this. Tell me why you think that they announced this alongside some new development features for Swift?
Interesting question. I think that, like we were saying at the beginning, this is about the future of the platform and by the platform, I mean, maybe it's about the very idea that Apple is one platform, because what they have announced for the new frameworks on top of Swift is something that really unifies development for Apple devices into one sort of continuous thought process for everything from a screen the size of a watch to a screen the size of a television, and conceivably to no screen at all, or whatever sort of visual metaphor you want to use for AR. One obvious thing that ties them together too is the way that software is built for this future platform. In the same way that Reality Composer gives you a graphical way to build AR objects instead of having to write them as code, alongside the stuff that I will get into presently about what Swift UI is, they built it into Xcode too, so that you can actually build interfaces for applications like in a WYSIWYG editor, like on a virtual iPhone, that you can drag and drop things in. And that turns into code on the side, which is just amazing. And like lowers the bar for people becoming developers for these platforms, but also dramatically increases the power of what you can do with just a little bit of code makes the work easier and capable of much more. So what is Swift UI? Swift UI, to me, is sort of low key the biggest news of this show, because I mean, there's an argument for giving it to AR stuff also, for the very reasons we've been discussing, that like that it really, really teases the coming of a future interaction paradigm. But for the stuff that exists already, Swift UI, I think, is a bigger deal than anything else they've announced. Like as far as what's coming for iOS and iPad and Mac and all of that, and the watch, you know, going into this conference, people were talking about UIKit on the Mac, iPad apps coming to the Mac as like a way of unifying iOS apps and Mac apps so that people don't have to duplicate their work in two different ways on two different platforms. And they did announce that. But I think that what they actually announced was, as far as that goes, was just sort of a short-term answer that works fine. But what's really coming is this long-term answer, which is Swift UI, which of course requires people to be writing in Swift. You know, people are still writing in Objective-C, the language that iOS has used since the beginning, but Apple's got its own programming language now, and that might have been the most fundamental shift they've announced at WWDC, which is a few years back already. But now, on top of this programming language they've created a declarative framework for building interfaces. Basically what that means is it takes, instead of having to write explicitly all the stuff you want your interface to do as code, you can now declare it like by name, like list or something like that. And just by saying what it is, this framework interprets that as an interface intelligently for all device sizes. And if it's, you know, I mean, I obviously I'm not enough of a programmer to really know the details about how it does this or when it does and doesn't do this. But the idea is like it will show the user the right interface to the information on the right screen at the right time, and it won't show it if it's too much for the size of screen it is or whatever. What this allows developers to do, other than, since it slims down their code so much, allows them to make their apps by dragging and dropping interface elements, which is incredible. But what it really allows them to do is sort of think of the software that they write as one thing that exposes its information to the interface. And then they can create the interface as one other thing that will deploy that application in all the right places in all the right ways, instead of having to write it over and over again for every device Apple makes. So there's one really obvious problem that this solves, which is that for the past, 9 years, let's say, like since iOS became something that was available on two device sizes instead of just one, every time Apple wanted to create even a new size class of device, let alone a new device entirely, developers had to kind of start over again in order to be on those platforms.
Yeah.
And, you know, now they've got iPhones of a bunch of different sizes, iPads of a bunch of different sizes, watches of a bunch of different sizes, TVs of arbitrarily large sizes, and Macs of a bunch of different sizes. And like, it's obviously untenable to like keep learning new sizes of devices and kinds of input to devices over and over again. So Apple's now unifying the way that you create interfaces for its devices into something that declares to the device what should happen, and then it happens. Developers were oohing and aahing in the crowd during the live demo. I mean, the dude built an app on stage, and apparently this got even more ridiculous in the actual sessions about this instead of just at the keynote. But even at the keynote, the guy was like, let's just build an app right now. And he just built an app in front of everyone. So there are so many advantages to this for non-developers, for developers, for companies, for Apple itself, that it really does mean something about the future of this platform as fundamentally new and different and exciting as the sort of more obvious changes that come from moving off of screens and into the world around you. Like going alongside that, this the other side of the news about the future of the platform is that the devices are going to take care of what goes where for you now, so that you can just concentrate on what it does, and like a lot of how it works is being handled for you. So it's sort of vague, the connection between these two things, but on the other hand, I think it really shows in the way that you work with these things, what the similarity is, because it's becoming more intuitive and more humane and less arcane all the time.
Now, I know that that was something that you were interested in learning a while ago, was coding more to a, or, you know, making that something that you kind of gave a little bit of your life to, mm-hmm. which is something that I've never once done. I've never thought that it'd be good to code. I don't think that's how my brain works. Maybe if it keeps getting easier and easier, I will eventually succumb, just because everybody codes. It kind of feels like that's the way of the world, right? Like, it'll eventually become so easy that's just a thing that you do.
Yeah.
Does this, like, interest you at all as a user?
Absolutely. I mean, as a potential programmer, it interests mm-hmm. me. I mean, I've been playing with Swift Playgrounds all along, but that seems, on the one hand, like child's play compared to what was announced on Monday with you know, the ways that Xcode works to build stuff in Swift UI. Because I don't want to learn how to make a little cartoon character pick up gems in a maze. I want to learn how to build iPhone apps. And now it looks like it's as easy to build iPhone apps as it is to learn to make a cartoon character run around in a maze. Because in the same way as the cartoon character is sort of given to you and the concept of the gems for him to pick up are given to you, like, increasingly UI elements of the iPhone are just being given to you and you just declare them and there they are. So this might actually be the way I want to learn how, and all this tinkering around I've done in Playgrounds has just sort of been familiarizing me with the way of thinking that's required to sort of step through things that happen, you know, in from the user's perspective, instantaneously, like one step at a time. But the thing is, I wouldn't say that I know, I certainly wouldn't say that I know Swift, you know, I wouldn't say that I know how to write Swift code. I get sort of the basic syntax if you give me all of the elements to use. But it does seem like that's what's starting to happen. Like, maybe just by using autocomplete in Xcode, I could figure out how to do some stuff.
Yeah. If you just guess a couple of times, you'll be able to build an app, is kind of how it feels.
Yeah. And like between the guessing and the like right clicking on the actual iPhone and selecting something from a menu, like, it's increasingly starting to seem like that's how it works. And what's really exciting is, you know, I think we've talked about this before, but the way that I learned to do web stuff, I think the way like most people who do web stuff learn to do web stuff, was by showing the source on web pages that had an element that you want and stealing it, finding it in the HTML and stealing it, copying it and pasting it into your thing and changing it around. And, you know, actually programming actual iPhone apps, you know, like, that's not something that someone who doesn't know anything about it can, I mean, leaving aside the fact that you have to pay $99 a year and download Xcode in order to do any of that, like, it's too abstracted away from like what's actually happening in the app for you to be able to you know, just take somebody else's code and start and turn it into your own app, unless you're just copying that app completely. But that seems like it's starting to change. Like, it's starting to seem like you really could fit an example of, you know, like, certain kinds of basic apps into something that you could just post online and that someone could just take and fill in, and, you know, maybe even put it into Xcode as like templates that you could start with. And if that's true, it might mean that the best way to learn how to develop apps for Apple's platforms is just to start doing it and bang your head against the wall until it works, which is impossible in the previous paradigm of, like, you have to write the code yourself.
Hello, internet friends, it's Drew, and I want to tell you about Keyhouse. There's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I read, tucked away in an essay he wrote about the seasons, where he said that he thought that the idea of four seasons was a lie. Instead, we should have six. Fall doesn't move to winter, and winter doesn't move to spring. Instead, he thought the season should be like so. Summer, fall, locking, winter, unlocking, and spring. I believe there's a beautiful poetry to the idea that creation itself requires a time of unlocking before anything of substance can bloom. And perhaps you're listening to this message right now, stuck between what you're doing and what you want to do for the rest of your life, realizing that you might be in that cruel season of unlocking too. Find your own space for unlocking. Go to Keyhouse, KEYHOU.SE, and let's find the key. What do you think this ending of WWDC 2019 was supposed to evoke for the development community and for the world at large?
I think that I think it's right to start with developers because it's easy to forget sometimes, but that's who this conference is for.
That's right.
It may be the case that the news at WWDC is actually more important for customers than the news at the fall iPhone event. But like the fall iPhone, maybe it's not even fair to just call it the iPhone event anymore. But like the hardware events are the ones that are geared towards customers buying stuff. But the WWDC keynote is the one that's about where all the stuff is going and what it's going to be like to use it. But clearly it's addressed to developers first. And I think the message to developers from this stuff was, this is where the future of, interaction design is going, where software is moving out of glass rectangles and into the world. Like it was meant to show that that's what Apple, it wants it to do. But I think the real message, particularly with the Swift UI thing, is that it's time for developers who have been doing this, the developers who are there, who have made it, who are like building apps on the store and making a living this way, it's time for them to start relearning how this stuff works from the ground up. It's time to move on to the next way of programming. And that is, obviously probably terrifying for lots of people because, it's just a fact that they've become experts in a very rarefied esoteric field. And they get paid to know how to do this thing that no one else knows how to do. And increasingly Apple's saying we're moving into a new world that only we know how to do so far. And we don't know perfectly, everybody's starting over in this new paradigm. But I think what Apple's doing is saying, look, we've thought this through. It makes sense. You will realize that it makes sense too. We will show you how much sense it makes by showing you how much code it eliminates and how much easier it is for you to write code. Like, let's all figure out how to create the next software paradigm. I think that's what the message is. It's saying, let's become students again.